Now, during, you say it took about a year to move up in the operations to the very end. It sounds like in each of these operations on the elevators, each step along the way was two workers, or were there ever more than two
No,
working?
two workers.
Two workers.
Two workers.
Now, as once you moved up to that last operation, what happened to Irene? Did she did not move up too?
No, she stayed. She stayed on that same operation. I don't know why I got a chance to learn all the other jobs.
Well, it sounds like you must have been pretty good.
So they I don't know why they moved me, but she was doing the same thing all the time.
Did you ever have any sense before of being mechanical?
No. No, I was just a mother of two kids. That's all.
Well, how did you feel about this as you moved from
Well,
operation to operation?
I felt proud of myself, and I felt good because then that I had never done anything like that, you know. I felt good that I could do something, you know. And being that it was a war, I thought that it was that I was doing my part, doing something, you know.
Did you have any relatives in the war?
Yes, I had at that time. I think I had some, or later, my sister had five boys, and they were all in the service, but I don't remember. One of them was in Germany, and one was in Japan, and anyway, they were scattered. She had five of them. Yeah.
Was there much talk or concern about the war among the people at work or at home?
Yeah, a lot of people talk, and there was a lot of things you couldn't get. Liquor you couldn't get it. I learned to drink rum at that time because that rum and coke, you could get rum. You know, we used to go to dances, and I used to carry a handbag, like a big one like that. And there was four, three women and myself, and these women were a little older than I was. And their husbands, and we'd go to the dances, and they'd tell me, "Come on, put that bottle in your bag. You got a big bag, so put it." Because they didn't allow, and they'd sell beer in the places, but they wouldn't sell, or else they sold the drinks too high or something. Anyway, we'd take our bottle, and then we'd go to the restroom, and we nip on the. It was rum.
How did you learn to start drinking?
Oh, I knew how to drink as long as before. My father used to always drink, and I not always well. He did. He drank, so I always used to tell me to give me a little nip, and I always liked it. I don't say to the excess, you know, but I liked it. I got drunk a few times, but I don't now that I'm old. I don't want it anymore, you know. It's just I don't know why. Beer, I used to love beer in summertime. Now I can't stand it. I can't drink it. I don't know why.
So during the war, though, was when you really started doing some more
Yeah,
drinking.
we used to go to the dances, and we used to drink and the dances and get home, you know, stuff like that.
Now, where were these dances?
In Los Angeles.
In what, one of the ballrooms or one of
Yeah,
the clubs?
one of the clubs. There was a club there, a Mexican place that they called, I think, Don Pancho, I think it was. It was on Broadway Street somewhere. And we used to go up there, and sometimes the two men, the three men, you know, would tell, well, there was, yeah, the three men would tell my husband, "How about it? The music is going to be finishing in an hour or so. How about, shall we put it for another hour or two?" And they would get the musicians and pay them off, you know, and keep the thing going for another hour or so. So that was a thing, you know.
And who were the other, it sounds like there were four couples then who used to go to the dances. Who were the other three couples? How
There
did
was
you
this.
meet them?
Oh, I met them before Pearl Harbor. I met them. There was a friend. One of them was a friend of my husband's from when he was young, and he lived in Santa Barbara. So he came around, and then I met them, and then he brought this other couple. And this other couple, but this other couple, and that's how we got to. And we were pretty close. We were pretty close. They were the ones that we were continuously in one house or the other. You know, we were.
Did you live close to each other by that time?
No, I lived in Pasadena, and the other two couple lived in Los Angeles, and the other couple lived in Watts. that older couple lived in Watts. They had a store up there.
Now, did you only see each other as couples, or would you spend time with the women, and the men would spend time with the men? Or was it always couples?
No, it was always couples. Mm-hmm. They'd come to the house, so we would go to their house, you know, and that's what it was.
And did any of them work? Any of the other women, were they working in the defense industry? How did they react to your working? Was there any, about it?
No, they never said anything, mm-hmm. No. No, they never worked. I did. This other lady, she used to work in a place, I think, where they package beans or dry foods or something. Mm-hmm. But she never worked in defense mode.
And this, when you mentioned last time that sometimes after work, if you'd work on a Saturday, your husband would come pick you up and he'd bring clothes and high heels and you would change and then go off to a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be
with them. Yeah, uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, with them. We would go to.
So that was your main social activity then, would be going to the...
Yeah, it wasn't every Saturday, of course, you know, every now and then, but...
How did you handle things like shopping, laundry, all of those sorts of things while you were working?
Well, I did it on weekends. On weekends, I would get my shopping done, and my mother would take care of... You know, during the war, during that time, you know, when I first started,
because
my kids were still young, but they were little. They knew how to do a lot of things. My girls knew how to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. My boy would clean the kitchen, and you know, my other little girl would help him, and they do a lot of things, and my mother would help too.
Mm-hmm. And how about your husband? Would he do things around the house?
Yeah, he would do.
Mm-hmm. What sort of
he would mop the kitchen floor and stuff like that, wash the walls or stuff like that.
Now, would he do that? Was he doing that before you started working, or was it when you started working?
No, he always did it. He always helped me, especially when we were having parties, you know. He would always take over, and he would help. He'd be serving and doing things, you know. Mm-hmm. He was that type of a guy.
Now, by the time you got to the... there was one other thing I meant to ask you. Very often... As we've talked to women, they've talked about women who are tough, or women who were lesbians, or who other people talked about as being lesbians.
Yeah.
You talked about that woman, Doris, that first
day. Uh-huh.
How was a woman like her viewed by the other workers? Because you said she was kind of tough. And
well, I'll tell you the truth. At that time, I never thought, I don't know about the other people, but I never thought anything about it, you know. I didn't know that thought anything about lesbians or anything. I just, you know, she was kind of tough. I don't say that she was one. I don't know, maybe that was her way of being.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody said anything.
So if a woman was like that, they wouldn't about her?
No, I never heard. She would be up there with the guys, you know, smoking and stuff like that, you know, but... I never said anything. I don't know.
But she would be accepted by the other women.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't know just what, if she was one or mm-hmm. what, you know, I don't know.
Now, you say it took about a year till you got to the end of the operation.
Yeah.
Were there other kinds of changes that occurred during that year in terms of your work or your work environment or the people that you spent time with?
Well, the only thing was that sometimes new people would come in. And they would say, you teach them the job, you know all the jobs. And sometimes they would make me mad. I'd tell them, what the heck, you get paid for it, you tell them to, you show them the job. I said, I don't get paid for that. So you show them the job. But I still would show them the job.
Well, it sounds like you started talking up some words.
Yeah, oh yeah, I tell you. Like what the lead person would say, you should have seen her a year ago. You go boot to her and she starts bawling. Look at her now, she can't keep her mouth shut. Because I figured, well, this is the only way you're going to survive, so I'm going to do it.
And would you get support from other women when you would talk up?
Oh, yeah, they did the same thing.
So what would happen if they did ask you to train someone? Would you have to go to another...
No.
Go back to the first place to train him?
Yeah, like say that they're going to put her here and drill out.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have to take her there and look. You do it this way and do it that way and listen up.
Mm.
See?
So you, rather than the lead person, would end up training?
Yeah, and I used to tell them. I said, they don't pay me for that. I said, you do it. No, come on, babe, you do it. You know what I'm... okay.
Now, how long were you working there before your son became ill?
I don't know if I worked 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, during that period, that first year, did you have the same lead the whole time?
Yeah. And the same people were there since.
Oh, all the other workers too?
Yeah.
So there wasn't too many new people coming in?
Well, there was maybe one or two like that, but they were mostly all the same people.
So you didn't, at that point, yet you didn't have all the men going off and it becoming almost all women?
Mm-mm. No, we had a lot of men. For some reason, they hadn't been taken or I don't know, just mm-hmm. what. But there were a lot of men.
Now, with the, for instance, when you go out at lunch especially, would it be all just women or would the men go too with you?
No, we'd go by ourselves. Yeah, we'd go by ourselves.
Now, after that year, you were at the end of that operation, then what happened in terms of your work? Did you stay on that same operation?
Mm-hmm.
And you stayed there till?
Till I terminate.
Till you terminate.
Mm-hmm.
What other kind of changes then in the 2 or 3 years occurred? You began to get your increases. Anything else?
No, I just got up to $1.05 and that was all.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get no more. Once I got that, that was it. That was what I was making when I quit.
Now, did you ever have any problem or occasion to, say, go talk to the shop steward about any problem?
No, like I say, there wasn't not even a shop steward around. There was the union wasn't that strong.
It might be that they weren't that visible down at the
it could have been.
Smaller plants, and they
yeah.
spent more of their time up at
the... Probably so. Like I say, it wasn't very strong like it is now. Now they have them everywhere. All the plants have union stewards and
mm-hmm.
everything. But at that time, I never talked to one. So I don't think it was very... It wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't very, very strong, I don't think. Because in those years, unions were not that strong,
mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Now, it seems, I think that plant on Santa Fe and 7th had a lot more black and Mexican workers than the other plants.
Oh, yeah?
Do you recall any black or Mexican lead people down there? Or were they all white?
They were all white. I don't remember, because I was in the fifth floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I never got out of there, so I guess, I don't think that there were.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Do you recall someone named Reginald Jones? He was a black man who may have been personnel manager or something there.
Reginald Jones. No. You interview him? You know him?
No, he died about a couple of years ago. And he was someone I've always been interested because that Santa Fe and 7th plant, as far as I could
tell, that was where he was.
It's probably where most of the Mexican and black workers were.
And he was there at that time?
And it's not clear to me if at that time he was actually some sort of personnel manager or not. But you don't remember having contact with other than white supervisory
right,
personnel.
Right, yeah.
Now, did anything else change in terms of work or your friends or anything at the workplace in those 2 or 3 years?
Mm-hmm. No, everything was the same. Like I say, you know, we just... So... No?
And how about in terms of your family life?
Well, the kids were getting bigger, you know, and they... That was... Let's see. When... at the time when my boy got sick... I had to, like I say, I had to quit and take care of him.
Now,
and then
before, this was the boy who had the pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
But before, how did you learn? Oops. Oh dear. Before that, you said that there was a problem with your other son with the heart trouble. Did that occur before your son got pneumonia?
No. By that time, I didn't know about my boy being sick. When I knew about my little boy being sick was when he started school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after. That was after. After
you already quit?
Yeah.
Oh. Now, so the first thing that happened was your older boy then got pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that all come about and you're deciding to quit then?
Well, because I couldn't get him into the hospital. For some reason or other, the doctor couldn't get him. And then... And to begin with, I couldn't even get a doctor at the time. So I had to call the police station, and then they sent me this doctor that was real nice, because I didn't have a family doctor. I never thought of having a family doctor. I never thought I would need one. So when this happened, this doctor came, and then he started taking care of him, and he started giving him shots, and that's what brought him out. Mm-hmm. But he was very sick for quite a long time. He was out of school. And then when he first started school again, he was very weak, and he had to be out of school again.
Now, were you called home from work when he got sick?
No. No, I got home, and my mother told me, he says, Jerry is very sick. He says he's got a lot of fever, and nothing can be done. It won't go down. He says he's been pretty sick all day. And he had been sick since the day before, but he didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. But then the following day, he was really, really sick. And that's how I knew when I came home from work. Mm-hmm. They told me.
And then at what point did you decide that you were going to have to quit work? You didn't even think about just calling in sick yourself or
no,
just calling in
no,
and saying,
you
I
see?
Couldn't help.
Then my husband told me, he said, you see what happens? You being left the kids alone and this and that, you know, and you see what the results are. So we got into a little bit of an argument. I kind of that, and then I said, okay, I'll go quit.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't want to, you know, at the time. But then I said, my boy comes first. So I had to do it. I was forced to do it.
And what did you tell them when you went down there?
Just that. Mm-hmm. That my boy was very sick and that I had to be home.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't suggest that you take a leave or just take some time off
no,
or anything
no.
like that?
They didn't. Nobody suggested anything, so I just took off.
And at that point, when you decided to quit that, did you think that you might want to go back after he got better? What were your thoughts?
No. No, I didn't think anything of that. My mind was just on him mm-hmm. at that moment, you know, at the time, you know, and I was just concentrating on him getting well, and that was all.
And how long did it take for him to recover then?
Well, it took him for about 3 or 4 months mm-hmm. before he was really, really well, because he couldn't get going into school because he would have a relapse at school. So he was pretty weak or so. So then the doctor kept on and giving him medicine and stuff. Mm-hmm. Finally he got well.
Now this would be before the end of the war, though, that all this happened.
Well, the war started before Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. And by the 50s, still the war was going on. Mm-hmm. So this was before, you know.
So this was, what, maybe about 44 or so?
At that time, I guess.
Now, how did your life change once you quit work and went back home again? What was your life like?
Well, I just took over the same as I was before, you know, taking care of my kids. Mm-hmm. And then I started, after that, I started working in a shoe shop, a Joyce shoe place. They used to make shoes, and I started working there as a marker.
And where was that? Was that in?
In Pasadena.
Uh-huh.
A walking distance from where I lived.
Oh.
There on Pasadena Avenue. Mm-hmm. So I started working there for a while. I worked maybe a year or so, and then I didn't work anymore.
And what kind of work was that exactly?
I would mark shoes. I would get packages of leather mm-hmm. already cut. All the pairs of shoes would be cut, and I would mark them. And with a marking machine, and put them in pairs, and put them on the belt, so the stitchers would get them and sew.
Uh-huh.
I would mark the areas where they were supposed to be sewed.
And how did you feel about that work compared to the kind of work you've been doing at Lockheed?
I just thought it was just a job, that's all.
Did you enjoy it as much?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then after that, my husband told me, he says, well, if you're going to be working, why don't you work with me? And I said, well, okay. So then there was this man that got sick. He was a janitor, and he got sick. So they gave me his theater. So I started working in the theater, and my husband would help me. He would get the biggest mopping and all that, and the windows he would do. Mm-hmm. I would do mostly the auditorium, sweep mm-hmm. it, and vacuum sometimes. But he would help me quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So we would do his job and my job together.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start doing that?
Well, a few years. Let's see.
See, the war in Europe was over in June of 45, and then the bomb was dropped, and the war with Japan was over in August 45.
Well, this was in the 50s. Mm-hmm. In the 50s. I was doing that in 1950. Yeah.
Well, how long was it then that after you quit and went home that you stayed home and didn't work before you went to work in the shoe plant?
Oh, I stayed home about a year or so.
Mm-hmm.
About a year or so. And then I took that little job as just something to do, yeah. I guess. And then afterwards I took the job at the theater.
Well, that's what I was wondering, what that year was like for you after you've been used to being around people all day to come back home again.
Well, it was, kind of quiet, and I wasn't too satisfied. That's why I started looking, because I had already tasted that going out business, and I wasn't too satisfied. That's why I started looking for something to do. And then in 1950, my boy got married in August, and my daughter got married in April. So that really made it worse, because I lost two of my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wrote, in 1950, I wrote to Lockheed, asking them if they had a job for me, because I knew that they were still, taking people.
Mm-hmm.
So they wrote and told me that they weren't taking any women, but that they would the following year. So then the following year I wrote again. And when I wrote, they told me to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that I was working with a theater, but they were giving me a hassle. They were hassling me up there in the theater because this man, it was union, mm-hmm. And they wanted me, they didn't want me to join the union. They wouldn't let me join the union. I would be working on a permit with the union. And I say, well, if I can work on a permit, why can't I work as a member? And no, that there's a lot of members here in Los Angeles without work. I say, well, why in the heck don't you send one up here then, if you got them?
What was their objection? Was it because you were a woman? Were there other women in that union?
Oh, well, there probably was, mm-hmm. Because they worked in the different buildings and stuff like that. But the thing was that, I don't know, they just didn't want me to join the union. They didn't want to take me as a member. So then when this happened, I finally got tired. I told him, well, go jump in the lake. I said, I quit. So I was already thinking of Lockheed.
Mm.
So then I wrote Lockheed, and they told me that I could come back in 51. So the minute I received that telegram, I head for Lockheed.
Now, did you quit before you actually started at Lockheed? Was there a period there where you weren't working again?
Yeah. From the theater,
mm-hmm.
From the theater, because they were hassling me about that, that they wanted some guy that would be a union.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, keep send one. And they kept on prolonging, prolonging. Finally, they sent one, and then I left.
Oh.
So I just...
Now, what? Let me ask you, before we start talking about you going back to work at Lockheed, what was it like, what sorts of experiences did you have with your kids as they were growing up and getting to be teenagers, the two older ones? Did you have any problems with them as teenagers? I mean, that's a real difficult time very often.
No, like I say, I was pretty lucky with my kids. My boy started growing, and he didn't get into any trouble. And my daughter, she would go to dances, but then not too much, because my husband was very jealous type. When they started growing, they would have dances at Garfield School, which was not too far from where we lived. But they would go. The dances would start, they would go at 8 o'clock. The dances would start about 9 o'clock. And they were supposed to come home by 10. So he would bother me because I would let him go and they would be late. So then Mary Lou, that was the oldest, she says, no. She says, I'm not going anymore. He says, they hassle you about it. They give you heck for it. And on account of us, he says, we're not going. I don't go. Because Julia was a little bit smaller. So she stayed home. Then in 51, she decided to get married. She was 15.
She was 15. How did you feel about her getting married so young?
I didn't like it, but it wasn't much I could do. I felt, well, see what happens. So she got married, and then Jerry had got married too.
And how old was he?
He was 19. So those two left. By that time, my boy had already had his operation, and he was growing. He was getting into the Catholic school, and he was getting into the school right in there. He was doing decisions on his own, and he decided he was going to be a priest. And he fixed it up with fathers, you know, to send him to Dominguez Seminary. So he was about 12, 13 years old when he went to the seminary.
So by 1950, there were three of them.
Well, Gennaro went, you know, to the seminary. And then they were all leaving. I only had Julia with me. So then when I was working, Gennaro went to the seminary about 50, because I was working already. I was working at Lockheed already again. And he went about 51, 52, around like, well, early 52.
How did he happen to go to Catholic school? Because he liked it. The family wasn't all that religious. You didn't spend that much
time. No, but I've always been a Catholic, you know, in my own way. But I'm not the type that always in church. But he was. He was on his own. He used to go to church every morning. At 5 o'clock, he'd get up, and he'd be an altar boy on his own. And then when this happened, that he wanted to go to the seminary, he talked to the priest on his own, and he came with them to my house to talk to me about it. So I told him, I said, well, if that's what he wants, that's what he'll get. So he went on his own, and he was up in Dominguez. When my husband died, he was in Dominguez.
And where's that?
That's up Dominguez. It's over Watts, way up there, someplace up there, towards the ocean, Dominguez. They have a... They had